You are tuned in to Kids
in the Pit.
It's Gabe from the Kids in the Pit podcast. Today I'm joined by Andy Atkins from A Plea for Purging. I met you on the way home from Furnace Fest because we both walked into Starbucks at the same time and I recognized your food truck and you recognized my mom from living in Nashville years ago. It was nice to meet you and thanks for letting me interview you.
Yeah, dude, thanks for having me on. It's been a long time coming. We started talking about this and yeah, like the day after Furnace Fest, and then my life is crazy, so just kept having to put it off, but we're finally here. Like 5 months later, we're finally partying together.
Yep. So now we're able to do it. Okay. So what do you do in A Plea for Purging?
Man, I just yell really loud. And I'd say what I'm best at is just talking in between the songs. I was never really that great of a vocalist, but somehow they thought I was funny enough to keep me on. So, you know, I just yell as best as I can for like 3 or 4 minutes during a song. And then I just get to talk in between songs. That's where I really shine.
Yep. So what year did A Plea for Purging start?
The band started in 2006 without me. They had a different singer named Justin, and they put out like a 5-song EP as a local band here in Nashville. And there's a longer story to it. When they started the band, they actually asked me to be the singer, but I had just stopped touring in my previous band and bought like a brand new car and got like a car payment and had to make at least like $500 a month to pay that car payment. So I couldn't be in their band because they were like going to go on tour and there's no way to make money right when you first get on the road, you know?
Yeah.
But then like 6 months later, I wrecked my car and the insurance paid it off.
Dang.
And their singer that they started the band with ended up quitting to go to college. So it all kind of just worked out where they wanted me in the band in the beginning. And I couldn't do it. And then like 6 months later, I wrecked my car and I was able to get in the band. And then we just pretty much started touring about 300 days a year, like 1 month after I joined the band. So for the first like couple years of the band, we were just touring nonstop and recording and writing and doing the band thing pretty heavily.
Yep. Are you glad you wrecked your car then?
Yeah, dude. I mean, it was cool. It was like meant to be. I don't know, you know, I don't know what I believe in fate and predestination and all that kind of stuff, but it seemed like the right thing, you know, like that whole time they had the band going, I was like, man, really wished I could have done it. But also I kind of thought that I was already like early mid 20s, like about that time. And I was like, oh, I already did the band thing. It didn't do anything for me. I guess I'll just be a grown up, you know? And then when the band or when the car wreck happened thing, it was like the one thing tying me down to not being able to do it. Cause at that point I just like stopped living where I was living and got rid of all of my bills. Cause like things are different now, I think, but like in the early 2000s, if you just like didn't have any bills and you had like 3 or 4 other dudes that didn't have any bills and everybody was okay with being homeless inside of a van, you could just tour like 250 to 300 days a year just by getting on MySpace or whatever, or like, Book My Life or whatever, you know, all that stuff, and just be on the road nonstop. You didn't make any money, but you didn't need to make that much money to get to the next town. So yeah, it was a blessing. It was really cool. I'm glad that it all worked out, because my entire life that I have right now was built out of the 7 or so years that I was in A Plea for Purging. Like I met my wife touring. I met all of my friends that I currently have and call my family through touring. And the business that I run now was kind of, I met my business partner through touring. So just my whole life would be completely different if I did not wreck that car. And so I'm stoked about it. Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, I really like the idea of touring, and I hope I get to like tour soon, within like next 10 years.
Yeah, dude, that would be fun.
Like, so you know DRI, right?
Yeah.
Like, they tour so much, it's ridiculous. Like, they'll do West Coast 1 month, they'll do East Coast, they'll do Midwest, like, I don't know, probably like definitely over 100 shows a year.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's how we started. We were touring nonstop for about 7 years, and the first year we clocked 306 shows. It's like on record somewhere. And then like after
Yes.
that, it was like the next year was like 290 something. And like it started getting less and less throughout the years, 'cause like you get a little older and like want to be at home a little bit more. You make a little bit more money so you can actually afford to pay for rent somewhere. And then once you start getting like girlfriends and wives and all that stuff, they want you to start being at home a little bit more. But we ran our time with it. We had a really good time, but I think like once we hit our like 6 or 7 year mark and everybody had just been on the road all the time, some of the dudes wanted to start getting married and like, sleep in their own beds and stuff, and it made sense. And so I mean, I thought I was a lifer. I thought I was the kind of dude that would tour forever and just till, my bones fell apart. But I gotta be honest now, I really love sleeping in my own bed, and hanging out
Yeah.
with my wife every day. It's pretty awesome. I got a dog and he's cool. So my life is different now than what I thought it would be. But I'm really happy. I'm happy that I had that experience and now I get to have the experiences that I have now too.
Yep. Yeah, touring, the idea of touring sounds really fun.
I think you need to do it, man. I mean, like, the thing I've always told everybody is if you have some sort of dream or some sort of idea, you're never gonna know really until you go do it if it is what you want to do. Like, like you could go out for a tour for 1 week or 2 weeks and like find out I don't like this, or you could get the bug and you could like want to do it forever. And
Yeah.
I think it's an important thing to do as you grow up to try to chase the things that are your dreams. 'Cause I don't want to be, the whole thing where you're like laying on your deathbed when you're like 8 years old or however old you make it to, like you don't want to look back with a lot of regret thinking like, man, I really wish I would have tried that thing out. So if you got the tenacity and the will and the passion to try to do something, and also the thing I always say is like, you need to have the wherewithal or like the reality to know like this isn't working out. Let's say you try it for a while and just like it's not practical and it's not going to happen. You need to be able to realize like, okay, I tried this thing. It's not right. What's the next thing? And be able to work hard at your next passion or your next thing
Yep.
to pursue it, So do it, man. Go on tour. Come to Nashville. I'll come to your show.
Yep. I'm playing guitar in my dad's band right now, and we are doing a like little 4 day tour in the UK. That's gonna be
Cool,
really fun.
dude.
Yep. So I think that counts as touring.
Yeah, you're going to a whole nother country and continent, dude.
Yep,
That's
that's gonna
touring.
be
That
awesome.
it took me till I was like 25 years old to be able to do that. So you're already one leg above me, man.
Yep. So where's your band from, and do you all still live there?
The dude started in Murfreesboro, which is a little town outside of Nashville, about 30 minutes away. It's a college town. I lived in Nashville. So like once I joined their band, I hung out in Murfreesboro a lot, but we always claimed being from Nashville. I'm still here. Blake, our guitar player and primary songwriter, he still lives here. Our bass player John lives in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is, I don't know, about 4 hours away. And our drummer Aaron lives in LA, out in California, and one of our other guitar players lives in Indiana. So we're a little spread all over the place. That's why, when we broke up, the idea was we were never going to do any of this again, because everybody lives all over the place and it's pretty impractical and very expensive to try to do anything again. But When Furnace Fest called, we were like, oh, let's try to figure it out, you know? And now it's like we're kind of a band again, but not really, you know, playing a couple shows here and there.
Yep. So you guys broke up before Furnace Fest, and now you guys are getting back.
Yeah, we broke up in 2012. So it's been like, you know, over a decade. And then when Furnace Fest hit us up, it was just like, you know, when we were all younger, like I used to go to Furnace Fest. The dudes always like, we were, Furnace Fest was like, you know, kind of the pinnacle in the southeast of like being a metal or hardcore band. It was a really sick few years. And we never got to play it. Like the band I was in at that time wasn't big enough to ever get asked to do that. So when we got asked to play Furnace Fest this time around, it was like, oh my gosh, we just have to do it, you know, whether, and for us at this point, it's not about making money. It's just about trying to make enough money to not lose money, you know? So when they gave us enough money to make it possible, we were like, yeah, let's go. And so it was kind of hard to, after 10 years of not screaming and not moving around on stage and all that, like it was quite a bit of work to pull it together, but it was fun. So then we were like, oh, we had a lot of fun. Let's do it. Let's do it again. So now we're playing some shows in Nashville at the end of next month.
Nice. And speaking of Furnace Fest, my dad's stage dive for Shai-Hulud in 2021 made it onto the shirt.
Dang, that's cool, man. That's awesome.
Yep, it was really cool right there.
Being on a shirt's a good time. I've been on quite a few in my life, and I have to say, that's about my favorite thing in the world is seeing somebody walk down the street and me be on their t-shirt.
Yep, it's cool.
So your dad's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool that he was able to get in it at, for the like it's just the, like Furnace Fest 2022 shirt. Like it's the like main one, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Okay, so do you have a favorite song to perform live?
Oh man. Dude, I don't know. Like I don't really, the song that we're known for and that's our biggest song and we play at the very end of the show is called Malevolence. It was on our record called Depravity that came out in 2009. That's like a song that like I could care less if we ever play it again, really, but like that's the crowd favorite. That's the like we're not a huge sing-along band because we're a little, you know, we're a little more metal than hardcore. So like
Yeah.
it's a little bit more about like the instrumentation and all that stuff. There ain't a ton of people singing along all the time, but that song in particular has got like two or three big vocal breaks that everybody sings along to. So it's pretty fun. And we have a song called And Weep that's pretty fun and people sing along to. I like the ones that people want to sing along to. As a vocalist, you kind of want people to like be screaming right back at you, you know? But also just any of the faster, like you said earlier, like the punk beat stuff, you know, the fast, that's my stuff. 'Cause I grew up in like hardcore and just happened to be in a metal band. So all the more faster hardcore style stuff is usually my favorite when people are running around in a circle and jumping off the stage and all that.
Yeah. Faster like hardcore is probably like my favorite. I'm like I like really like fast stuff usually. Because I mean just I really like Municipal Waste, you know them?
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. They like pretty much almost every beat in their song is just get like it's really
Yeah,
fast.
dude, just thrashy fast or crossover thing. Yeah, they got cool stuff.
And they do it like really fast, and then it's like get like they do some really fast beats.
Yeah, I can't do that.
But
I used to play drums when I started playing drums when I first started playing music, and I just fall apart. I'm not very good at all. That's why I had
yeah.
to switch to screaming because no offense to all the other vocalists out there in the world, but for myself, it seemed like the easiest, least talented thing that I could do was just scream in a band as opposed to
Yeah.
have to really learn how to play an instrument very well. And I got a lot of stuff I think I got to say. People, and for some reason, we all think people want to hear what's inside our brains. And I thought, oh, everybody wants to hear what I got to say. So I got up there, grabbed a microphone, you know?
Yep. So about drums, like I can play drums and I can keep a beat, but like I'm not like an official like drummer. I like can play drums, like I'm fine at it, but I'm like I'm not I play guitar mainly, but I can do like some basics and stuff. I can do
Yeah, that's cool. I think it's like, as a musician that's trying to grow in your craft and grow in songwriting, it's good to have a little bit of like foundation in all of it. You know, like I can play drums a little bit, I can play guitar and bass a little bit. Like I'm not great at any of them, but I'm okay enough at all of them that like if I had an idea in my head, I can put it down and record it and write a song. And I think that's it's cool to be able to do that. You know, like you said before we started the podcast, you and your buddies wrote a song, but like you were the only one available and around to be able to record the song at the time. Like it
So I
comes
just
in
did it all.
handy when you can do that kind of stuff and just you know, you're not always gonna have a room full of dudes that are friends that you're gonna be able to write music with. Sometimes you're gonna be alone and you wanna be able to like put all those ideas down. And so having the foundation to be able to play drums a little bit, even though you're not a drummer, is a really good thing.
Yep, and like I can write some like parts of songs just on my own.
Yeah.
We have a different song where like I wrote everything and me and one of my other friends just wrote the vocals.
Right on. That's cool.
So I pretty much made everything. Me and my friend made all the vocals.
That's cool. I'm not the best. Like I said, I'm not the best musician. So for me, like I work a lot better in a collaborative environment. Like usually the way Plea worked out was Blake, our guitar player, kind of had the bones of a song, and then he would go to our drummer and Aaron, and they would like beef the song up and make it pretty much what it was. And then my job was just to come in and put vocals on it, or every once in a while I'd be like, hey, this part right here would be a little catchier if we moved this and this around and left room for the vocals to be able to do this. But I'm not like, you know, I could pull you up a couple random things on my hard drive of songs that I've written all the way through, and they're not very good. And the stuff that we wrote with Plea was quite a bit better because I had really talented dudes that I could lean on to be able to just work with what they gave me. And so I was really lucky to be the least talented dude in a group of really talented guys, and some reason they let me piggyback off of them, you know.
So I feel like when we have, like, when I have all my friends that play instruments together, like, I don't know, it's hard to write songs with all of us. Like, I'm better one-on-one, in my opinion. Like, I'm better just me and drummer, just me and the guitarist. Like, just like that. Like, one-on-one. That's easier for me.
Right on, because then you don't have as much confusion and you know, like too many cooks in the kitchen sometimes. Yeah, there's pros and cons to being in a room full of five dudes or whatever, and then being alone, you know, with a computer and another dude or whatever. Like, yeah, it's they all got the pros and cons for sure.
I had a random food truck burger at Furnace Fest, and then I realized we met you that it was your food th and then we realized when we met you it was your food truck. It was really good. So tell me about your burger company.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, it's called Bad Luck Burger Club. The long story short is like after Plea was over, I toured for a long time, like doing like stage production for like arena tours and that kind of stuff, and working random jobs. And the COVID hit, you know, the pandemic kind of shut everything down in the world for a little bit. So I stopped working in music, and it was kind of just like bumming around town trying to figure out what the next thing was. And I bought a flat top griddle just to go on our deck behind our house and started making smash burgers. You know, started trying to emulate the cheeseburgers that I'd eaten all over the country, but like didn't really have in Nashville at the time. Like Nashville's kind of got more of a Real big into fried hot chicken and any of the kind of cheeseburgers around town are more thick burgers. And so I was just like trying to make the cheeseburger that I found on tour. And so then come to find out my friend Cody, who actually he played in more of like a rock and roll band. They were called The Wedding. They were on Tooth & Nail Records. We were just kind of buddies, not didn't know each other super well, but we were just like Instagram friends. And hung out around town every once in a while, but we started talking to each other online about making cheeseburgers because he was making cheeseburgers too. So right in the height of the pandemic, when nobody was really allowed to hang out and they were trying to make everybody stay inside, we started throwing parking lot parties underneath a tent, selling cheeseburgers to people in parking lots and just playing like hardcore and hanging out. And
Nice.
since yeah, it was fun and like. Since there was all this scare about being indoors with a whole bunch of people, but they were saying, oh, it's okay to be outside. We just have big, lots of people show up. I mean, there'd be like 100+ people in line to get a cheeseburger in a random parking lot in town. And we were like super illegal. Like, we didn't have any permits, we didn't have any business licenses. Like, we didn't have any of that kind of stuff. We were just like hanging out making cheeseburgers. And it just got more and more popular. Like, we did it all through 2001 on the weekends, just having fun. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And every time we'd set up, there'd be a larger group of people show up. And so December of 2021, we had a line of probably 150 people or so trying to get our cheeseburger in this parking lot. And the health department showed up and basically like stopped our service because like you're supposed to have all these different permits and all these legalities with the state to like to be able to serve people food and not get them sick, and we didn't have that. And so they basically shut us down for a second and said, hey, we're not going to officially shut you down right now because there's a line of 150 people that would be really upset at us, but you're not allowed to do this thing that you're doing anymore. And if you want to continue being serious about it, you either have to get a food truck and go through all the permits or get or try to get a restaurant. And so we did that final service. And then like the next week we went and started talking to the health department. And me and Cody decided like, yo, let's try to give this a real like fighting chance and actually try to turn it into a business. So we bought a food truck, and Cody had still had a job at that point, and he quit his job a little bit later. And then we just started making cheeseburgers full time in a food truck. And I mean, that whole thing started in 2021, and now it's 2024. And I don't know, we've had to have sold over 100,000 cheeseburgers at this point. Like, we're just
Thanks.
crazy selling cheeseburgers all the time. And we have a staff of 7 people that work with us now. We have 2 different food trucks. And when Plea got asked to go down and play Furnace Fest, Chad and everybody asked if we would bring the burger truck too. And we brought that down there and it was awesome. We had a really awesome time. So we're gonna go back next year. Like, Plea's not playing, but the Burger Club's going to be there selling cheeseburgers again. And
Nice.
we just opened up our second food truck, and we're crushing, dude. We're having a good time.
Yeah. Also, like, so think about like lemonade stands. You don't need like permits or anything for that, right?
What's crazy is not like, no, not really. Like, most city officials aren't going to come. Like, if you had a lemonade stand in your front yard,
Yep.
most city officials aren't going to actually come like give you a hard time. But technically, yes, technically you should have some sort of permit, business license to pay taxes and to make sure that you're following all the regulations. It's wild.
I mean, it usually wouldn't, I think it wouldn't really matter for taxes because lemonade stands usually like at the most they'll make like 20, 30 bucks.
Right, yeah, it's
Doing.
not crazy money. The government really doesn't really even look at you unless you make like I think it's like $600 or more. Like, then that's when they want to start taxing you off stuff. But if you just had a really successful lemonade stand, let's say you went to like the busiest place in town and you know, had a cool story about why you were raising money or something, you might end up getting to make a lot of money. Who knows?
Also, I didn't catch your set at Furnace Fest because I didn't know you guys, but I heard you were like throwing out cheeseburgers into the crowd, right?
Yeah, for sure, dude. Yeah, we most all of our songs, like every song we have, is a pretty serious, like angry song. But like, I wrote one song as a joke, as a B-side on one of our 7 inches, called "Fat Pride," just because I'm a huge fat dude. So the whole song is just funny, and it's about being fat and being proud of being fat. So we played that song, which is not a song that we normally played on tour. But we played that song solely so the guys could come out and throw a bunch of cheeseburgers off stage. So like,
Fun.
earlier in the day before he got on stage, I told all the dudes at the burger club, I said, "Hey, make like 30 or 40 cheeseburgers and bring them on stage during my band and throw them out." And they did. We actually got one of those big slingshots where you slingshot water balloons. And that's what they were supposed to use, but it didn't work very good, so they just started throwing them. But it was fun.
I mean, yeah, I wish I saw you guys set because I wanted another cheeseburger. Those were good.
Yeah, dude, thank you, man. Well, you could
What's your
fly down to
secret?
Nashville. We're gonna throw cheeseburgers off the stage at our Nashville show. You could fly down here and catch one.
Should we come to Nashville?
Doubt it. We can get burgers at Furnace Fest. All right.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, we'll have them there.
Yep.
Yeah, dude, we have fun with it. Like, our band was never really that serious. Like, as far as like, it's just everything I do in life is about trying to have fun. You know, it's not about like trying to be too serious about anything. And so if you're like on stage having a good time, why not make it even more fun by throwing a bunch of cheeseburgers out at people, you know?
Yep.
And it's crazy cross promotion. Like, right after that, everybody from that crowd went and bought a cheeseburger, you
They'll
know?
be like, "Ooh, I want more.
Yeah, for sure.
Buy one, get one free." Well, no,
Yeah, that'd be sick.
catch one, get one free. No.
Catch one,
Yeah,
buy
if you catch
catch
one, then you can come buy one.
Yeah.
Somehow we make people give us more money. Yeah, that's the rule.
Yep.
They think they're getting a deal, but really we're just getting their money.
Yep. Are you putting like drugs in there and getting them hooked or something?
Yeah, we sprinkle a little bit of coke in every single one of them, you know, just to get them coming back.
Yep.
Yeah,
Wonder it was so good.
dude. It's like back in the day, in the really, really early days, there was like, I don't really know this, but they say that cocaine was in Coca-Cola, because like
Yeah, like.
Coca-Cola and cocaine and all that kind of derived from the same coca plant. So there was like some gnarly stuff in Coca-Cola in the very beginning that got you addicted, and then they
Like in
had
the
to take that stuff
1920s
out.
and stuff.
Yeah, way back there,
Yep.
whenever it started. I'm addicted to Diet Coke. I think that aspartame stuff, that fake sugar, somehow it's some sort of drug, dude. I'm driving down the store, driving down the road by the store. I start freaking itching, you know? I'm like, oh, I gotta get one, dude. Gotta pull in there.
Yep. I'm addicted to root beer.
Oh yeah, root beer is good stuff, dude.
I love root beer.
Dang, you
So good.
bet, dude. I'll tell you what. Well, you don't really want to be drinking a bunch of fake sugar, but also you don't want to be drinking a bunch of sugar. Eventually, you drink a whole bunch of sugar, you end up looking like me, which I look pretty cool, but you look pretty cool, so don't look like me.
Yep.
Yeah,
But
dude.
like so on YouTube there's this like guy that's like he says like rubber in like a really goofy voice and it's
Oh yeah.
so stupid, and I love like I'm addicted to those videos. They're
Dang, dude.
like they
You
have
love
like
root beer and the root bearer guy.
yeah, they're the videos are just so goofy. Just search up like root burr and you'll see it.
Dude, I'll
It's
check it out.
they're so goofy. And they have videos that are like which boat can hold the most root burr? And like they put it over in like a pool, they take like a toy boat and put root beer cans on it.
Oh, dang.
And they take like five boats. It's so dumb. I love it though.
Dude, you should step it up. You should try to get you like a real boat that people get in. and then try to see how many cases of root beer you can put in there before it sinks.
Yeah, let's
and
go.
put a YouTube video up and you know, tag that guy in it, and then, you know, then maybe they'll have you on one of his videos.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Hey man, I'm always thinking.
Yep, I love root beer. So,
sick.
What was the first punk hardcore metal show you attended, and how old were you?
Man, that's hard to say. I was probably somewhere in the range of 15 or so. And it's actually not like, it's not that cool for like a podcast, but it was like a Memphis hardcore show with a bunch of Memphis local bands. It was pretty sick. I think I remember Clench Fist playing, a band called Via Crucis, which were like so cool that never got out of Memphis really. God, I can't remember who else. Those are like the two that I remember for sure. But it was a good time, dude.
Yep.
And like, that's like, I remember like once I like a couple like local shows like that, and then was able to start going and seeing like touring bands and stuff. Like, I lived in a town called Paris, Tennessee, which was an hour and a half away from Nashville, and it was an hour and a half away from Memphis, and it had nothing. Like, the only shows that happened there in our town was like my local band trying to play shows. And so once we got old enough, like I was about 15 when my friends started driving and we would get to drive to Nashville or Memphis and see shows. Dude, my whole world opened up. My whole world changed. Cause like, I don't know, you've been to shows and think about your first show you went to and like how fast your heart was beating and how exciting you were and how you were a part of something. Like, you got a cool thing because you come from it, like your parents who are already a part of this. So maybe growing up since you were really young, you've kind of been aware of all of this. But I grew up in a little small town where everybody listened to country, and all you heard was the radio. And that day there wasn't the internet. So like the first time I ever went to like a hardcore show, I hadn't even ever heard anything. I hadn't even like heard hardcore. I saw it before I'd ever heard it, and I was just like, oh my gosh, dude, this is insane. It changed my life, dude. Everything I have in my life is built off of going to shows like that.
My first shows were Bad Religion and Alkaline Trio, but so we live in Delaware, but it was at the Hard Rock Live in Orlando. The reason we saw a show there is because we go to Disney World every year, and it aligned with the trip that we already booked. It just aligned with it, so we decided to go, and it was really cool.
Dang, that's awesome, man.
Yep. It was I feel like smaller shows are more fun than those like big places, right?
Sure.
Because I mean, it's just like you get to connect with like everyone. It's just cool to talk to everyone in the band and stuff, and like it just like I feel like it's a cooler vibe than this big place. Just being in a little room, super loud. I wear
for sure. I mean, dude, like, yeah, the intensity, the community, everything about like the smaller shows. You know, there's no barricade. You can, you know, be 1 foot away from the singer if you want to. You know, it definitely is a special thing that happens. You know, who knows if it really does, because I'm just so old and disconnected. But it's like, it's not as freeing, and like it seems like there's more rules now more than ever. You know, like there's a lot less of those like smaller DIY venues letting crazy things happen. Like you know, you used to be able to see hundreds of stage dives a night at shows, and now like there's a barricade and a no stage diving rule at 90% of venues that you go to at this point in life. But
unless you're watching Terror, you know how Scott
Oh, for sure.
Like more stage dives. I think I counted for the last, I think he was like, we need to get over 200 stage dives or something. And I looked at, like, I counted each stage dive. It was for, like, the last three songs. I think there were, like, maybe, I don't remember, but I have it in my phone somewhere. Let me look.
130 something.
Let me see. 100 camera stage dives. Let me look.
That's it. During our last set, our last song at Furnace Fest, we got 101
Wow.
during one song. Yeah, there's a guy counting it with a clicker.
So last two songs, Furnace Fest 2023, stage dive count 131 for Terror.
That's awesome. Dude, Scott knows how to do it, man. They always have a really great show.
My arm. What is wrong with my arm? But yeah, I saw I think it's 131. It's somewhere around there because I might have miscounted at one point.
We used to try, you know, like I don't really know what they're used for, but there's these little clicker things you put in your hand and you can click and it counts. We used to like people would use them at the door. Like when you walk into a venue and it would click how many people walked in the door, so you know how many people paid. We used to carry one of those on tour with us back in the day, and I'd make like our merch guy or tour manager or whoever stand at the soundboard and click how many stage dives we got. And to on record, the most stage dives we ever got during one set was 426.
Jesus.
I know, I'm trying to get 500 stage dives per night. We're playing two shows in Nashville, the 29th and 30th of March. I'm trying to get 500 stage dives a night. We'll
We should
see.
tell the crowd we gotta get 500 stage dives this set.
Yeah, that's the goal, dude. We're gonna crush.
Yep. Where the show is at? Like what's the place? Is it a little place or what?
It's a place called the Basement East in East Nashville. It's the cap is 600 people, 550, 600, something like that. One night is sold out. The second night is still got a few tickets, but I bet it'd probably sell out before it's over with. So I think we got a pretty good chance of having a good time getting a few dives out for sure.
And it's a home show, so that's even better.
Yeah, for sure. It's cool because like we got together and we did that Furnace Fest show, and a lot of friends from home came, but not everybody can, everybody's older now and's got families and kids. So like not everybody can afford to like drop everything they're doing and pay however much money it costs to go to Furnace Fest for the weekend to see us play, So like to get to play at home and the tickets are like fairly cheap and people like we're gonna see a lot of good old friends that we haven't seen in a long time, which is going to be amazing. And then there's people like flying in from other states and driving in and stuff too. So it's amazing when you can like we were such a tiny band that didn't really matter in the grand scheme of bands. Like, our name is nothing compared to so many other bands. And to think about a decade later being able to play some shows and a lot of people care and come and hang out and want to be a part of it is insane. So we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
So yeah, how I was talking about Municipal Waste earlier, but I saw them two nights in a row this month. So one was with a barricade and one was without. The one with without was so much more fun. I dove like five times, but on the second dive I lost my shoe. So I dove four times. Well, counting the one where I lost my shoe, I dove four times without a shoe.
Dang, the real question is, did you ever get that shoe back or did you have to go home shoeless?
I got it.
All
We
right, sick. That'd be
after
a bummer if you were still just walking around with one shoe. You never got another shoe.
Yep. And also it was in Washington DC. And it was just under the stage, but like where it was at the Black Cat. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's like this cool little venue.
For sure.
The where like the trailers and stuff were parked, it was behind. Like it was in this like alley with tons of rats, so we walked down it, and there were just like rats crossing like the road where we were going through, and it was really gross.
Dang, dude, you should have you what you should have done is strapped your feet onto a couple rats and they would have just like carried you across the street and then it would have been okay because you didn't have a shoe You wouldn't have had to walk. They would have walked for you.
So we got the shoe before that. But if I lost my shoe, that'd be gross.
Yeah, maybe. I may be a little gross, but you can wash your feet.
That sock was disgusting because I was walking on the like sidewalk in city for a little bit just with the sock on.
Yeah.
It was completely black.
Dang, you're wild. I hope you threw the sock away.
From diving and stuff, it was like soaked in beer and stuff. Ugh, it was
Oh
disgusting.
yeah. I hear you. A beer soaked black sock. That's worth going in the trash. I'll send you a new one if you need one.
We still washed it because, we don't
Yeah,
have the.
socks are precious. I get you.
Yep, socks are nice. I like socks. But yeah, it was disgusting. It was nasty. Okay. So, what is your favorite place you've toured in?
Dude, probably New Zealand. We were lucky enough during the last year of the band to go to Australia and New Zealand for a month. And it was beautiful and amazing, and the people were awesome. And just to like, not trying to be self-deprecating, but like truly our band got to experience some really crazy stuff for how small our band was. And for us, I was actually just looking through some videos on the internet last night, trying to put together some promo for the new show. And like I ran across a video of us playing a little club in New Zealand. And kids were like going crazy and singing our words and jumping off stage. And it's insane to think that like I started my life in this world of heavy music as like some, teenage kid with big dreams of just like traveling the world and never really thinking it was possible. And I did it. And I like went all the as far as you can go. Like that is as far as you can get away from here.
That's
It
like
is like New Zealand and Australia. And like I did
opposite.
it. Yeah, it's like the opposite side of the world. And
Unless
so like
you play in the middle of the Indian Ocean, because like
right, yeah.
maybe a little bit of the US is like touching it on like on the other side, it's like parallel with it. But like most of the US, it's just like off the west coast of Australia. So it'd just be in the middle of the Indian Ocean.
Yeah, you know more about geography than I do.
I have
But
geography.
word. But yeah, dude, going to New Zealand and like everybody was amazing and people singing along. We probably had more people singing along to our songs in New Zealand than we did in America, which was crazy. It was amazing. And the every year I think, man, I would love to go back to New Zealand just to like out as a vacation, but I can't afford that. Like that was the other thing that was cool about being in a band and like getting to go to Europe and all these other countries is like I grew up really poor and I'm still like I'm not poor, but I ain't got any extra money, like I can't afford to go all over the place. So like I had a chance to go see all these places all over the world and get paid to do it, kinda. I mean, I didn't make a lot of money, but like at least it was getting paid for.
I
I
mean, like,
didn't have to pay to go
you're
do it.
not paying for it. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was sick. And so like that it was amazing, man. Like I'm really thankful to have gotten to do that. Australia was amazing too. And any of the overseas stuff that we did is like really, really big and important just because like it's insane to think that I was just this little kid that had an idea that I could play music one day and I actually really did it, It's
Yep.
awesome.
I remember so you were saying like something like you guys like have like more people like singing along in Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah.
So Sick of It All recently just played like Japan in January.
Cool.
We went with them because like we found some really cheap tickets. I mean like was it 700 round trip?
Yep.
Which is insane for Japan.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yep. And my mom used to work for them, so like she knows them really well. And we're friends with them, so we just went there and it was awesome. But
That's cool, dude.
so many people there were singing like all the words, even like the deep cuts and stuff. It was ridiculous. And the
Yeah,
USP.
dude. Japan, they love heavy music. They love hardcore and metal and American culture. It's insane.
I think in the US, people are kind of like despoiled from hardcore because there's shows whenever you want it. You
For
can go
sure.
every day, I bet. If you're in Philly, Baltimore, New York, Nashville, I bet. But like people in Japan, like they don't get that many, not like they don't get that many like American band like shows, right?
For sure. Not near as much as we do, yeah. So they don't take it for granted.
Like Sick of It All tours like every year in the US.
Yeah.
In Japan they to go like every what 5 years? Something like that. Five, I know, yeah. They go to it was cool to see like everyone. Also,
Yeah, that's awesome.
they're so much better at like stage dives there because like they'll do like back flips into the crowd and stuff, front flips. It's nuts.
Damn, they got a lot of athletes over there, I guess.
I guess
Primed up.
they're just so good at it.
I can't jump for, I'm a pretty big boy. I've only stage dove a couple times, and that was because I was being basically made to do it. But one time, dude, that's the same show I told you about where we got 426 stage dives.
Yeah.
I stage dove at the very end of the show, and the crowd, it was a really small little venue, but they carried me all the way out the door. So once I jumped off stage, my feet didn't hit the ground until I was outside. They like passed me all the way to the front door, and then I landed outside and walked away. It was like one of the coolest moments of all time for me.
I mean, so I feel like there should probably be a stage dive weight limit, like for the safety of others,
Yeah, I shouldn't be stage diving on people.
because like, I mean, it's kind of like, no offense, but like, it's kind of a lot.
Yeah,
I'm just.
I know, dude. What's crazy is I, as a dude on stage playing music, I like stage diving is the thing that I want to see. That I care about that more than moshing, more than singing, more than anything. I love seeing people jump off stage, so I want people to do that. But I don't like jumping off stage, and I don't like being jumped on. So like it's totally hypocritical because like I don't want you to jump off the stage and me have to catch you.
Yep.
So I feel bad for all the kids that are having to catch all these people that I'm making jump off stage. But it's fun for me.
What was I gonna say? Crap. I was about to say something and I forgot. Okay. It may come back to me later.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, diving's fun, just I don't like being dove on because it's kind of odd. I mean it's cool when people dive for shows and but like it's like kinda crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to just like you gotta think about it. Everybody knows all the different etiquette. You're going to a hardcore show, and you just have to expect the unexpected and the craziness. But you got to think about the people that just show up and they just like really like a band and they just want to stand up front and they just want to watch a band and they're just stoked. And then all these big, sweaty, gross dudes and chicks are jumping off the stage onto them, and they're just like, man, I'm just trying to watch this band and sing along a little bit and I'm just getting annihilated every 30 seconds, like. I'm sure it's a little much, That's why I stand in the back. I'm
Yep.
too old for it now.
So in like September, I think, Terror and Hatebreed did a tour. But at Sayreville, New Jersey, Terror did like they said reverse stage dives because there was a barrier so you couldn't dive over it. So they all like they all crowd surfed and it was ridiculous. It was like
Nice.
he said. But like my mom got a bloody nose for the first time in like years because somehow she got like kicked in the head and she just got a bloody nose at the show.
Dang, dude.
So
It ain't fun.
it was way crazier than Hatebreed. Like Terror is just nuts.
Yeah, I would never want to have to play after Terror ever. Like that, it's such a good, fun show. You know, like you watch the crowd have the time of their lives, and then you have to go up on stage after them and try to get people to like care about you after Scott Vogel is just like crushed. Yeah. I'm glad that we are never big enough to have to play after them.
Yep. But like it's Hatebreed was really fun to see because I
Yeah.
just like seeing Hatebreed. It's really fun. They're just cool live.
For sure. And dude, Jamie's lyrics and persona is all about, you know, like doing better, trying harder, achieving, overcoming, like
Yep.
That's my shit. I love that. I love after you
About
can see a show and feel inspired to like go out and try to live a better life is always
like
important and cool to me.
it's like uplifting and it's like
Yeah.
perseverance.
Yeah, for sure. It's cool.
Yep. Get it, perseverance song.
Yeah,
And
for sure.
but
Yeah,
they have a lot of
absolutely.
stuff. Like they're just really good. I like their most of their stuff. I'm not too into their like newer albums.
Yeah.
It's just more like more metally than I'm into, but like I love the first two albums, and I love the first four albums are just like my favorites.
For sure. That's cool.
Under the Knife, there's the like blue one. What's it called?
Satisfaction.
Yeah, Satisfaction. There's Perseverance, and what's the white
Right.
one? Like the gray one.
Rise of Brutality.
Rise of Brutality. Yeah. Yep. I can't think of the
You
name
got
of
it all, dude.
albums.
Dude, I'm terrible with names of albums and songs.
I'm terrible with names of people. Like I just can't remember people's names.
That's okay. As long as you can remember their name, or not their name, but their face, and be like, yo, dude, what up? I
Yeah.
have probably like 20-year long relationships with people where I'm just like, we know each other as dude and man, and you know, like, hey, you know, there's people that I know in Nashville that I see, you know, at least once a month for the past 20 years, and I don't know their name. And that's kind of sad, but it's also there's a lot of names out there, man. It's
Yep.
hard to keep up. And after you've known somebody long enough, you can't be like, yo, dude, we've been saying hi to each other for 15 years. I don't know your name. You know, you just gotta roll with it.
Okay, so what is your favorite type of food from another country?
Oh man, that's heavy, dude. I really, really love Indian food and biryani Indian food in particular. Yeah, I like any kind of curry. That's probably my favorite stuff for sure. And then like in Australia, I thought it was really cool that you could get basically like sushi burritos. You just get like there would be vendors on the side of the street that would just You could walk up and give them like $5, and they'd give you a big sushi roll that wasn't cut up into individual pieces. And then you could just like walk down the street and chomp on a big roll of sushi. It was pretty sick.
Wow, that sounds. I bet that's good. I would try that for sure.
Yeah, dude. You'd love it. Maybe, unless you'd hate it. You might hate it. Everybody's got different tastes, but I strongly encourage it.
So if you could tell your 12-year-old self anything at all, what would you tell him?
Oh man, there's so much baggage with that one because I've been through a lot of really crazy, heavy things in my life. But I think I would try to tell myself to be more present in every moment. Something that I'm working on in my life currently is being completely present. Like this conversation with you right now is like the most important thing that I have going on in my life. Yes, I have a crazy to-do list of things that I'm going to start doing soon as we get off this call, but like that's not important to me right now. you are important to me right now. And it's taken me a long time to try to wrap my brain around that because I live in a lot of stress about the future and about all of the piling up things that I have to do every day. And I think if I could have practiced presence a lot more when I was younger, maybe the last like 20 years of my life would have been had a little less heartache and a little less headache and stress. That might not sound like a fancy, awesome answer, but that's what I would tell myself to try to care more about the moment and like the whole journey versus the destination thing. You know, you hear people say it's not the destination, it's the journey. That's true. Like chasing your dream, the chasing the dream part is the fun part. Capturing the dream, isn't as cool. Like I think, once you get there, you realize it's different than whatever gold-plated version of what you thought the dream was going to be. It's trying to get it and trying to prove to yourself that you can capture the dream is more important than actually getting it. Hopefully that means something to you.
Yeah, nice. That's all good advice. Thank you.
Heck yeah.
So, anything to add before we wrap it up?
Dude, just to expound on what I was just talking about, older you get, like right now, how old are you?
12.
You're 12, dude. You still got a pretty awesome life. You're still like young enough that life is fun and a little bit innocent. And like once you get into paying bills and paying taxes and all the stuff that you got to do as an adult, you start getting cynical and mad and angry, and all the like childhood joy kind of just falls behind. And I don't know what it is, but just the older we get, the more grumpy we become, it seems like, or at least I that was my case for a really long time. And so I'm really just trying to work on being happy and positive and growing more into fun and love and excitement and positivity as opposed to becoming more and more cynical. So that's all I can say to you or to anyone listening is to just always try to remember if it's not bringing you or the others around you joy and love, then what's the point? And just to try to always act with positivity and joy in mind and love in mind. And hopefully you and all those around you grow because of it. That's where I'm at.
I'm definitely going to evade taxes when I'm older. I hate taxes.
Dude, do what you got to do. I will tell you they'll come for you, but if you can hide for long enough,
I already got
you got a plan.
all the lyrics in my song are all the lyrics in my song Tax Evasion are complete. That's my plan.
They're
Yep.
angry. I read them earlier.
Yep. Okay.
I love it, dude. Yeah, man. Well, evade taxes. I'll tell you what, I had to pay like a $20,000 tax bill about 4 weeks ago. So I get it. You don't want to pay, and I'm gonna have to pay more in like another couple weeks. So last as long as you can without paying anybody anything.
Okay, so moral of the story, evade taxes.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to let all the people know today. Don't pay your taxes.
So, thanks to Andy for joining me today, and thanks to all of you for watching or listening. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel and follow me on Spotify and other streaming platforms. Next week, bye.
Peace.